Good morning, everyone. My name is Tara McAlexander, and I am pleased to welcome you to our session, Broadening the Local Risk Assessment Process to Reflect Global Diversity. We have four speakers here today, and I will start with our first speaker, Dr. Mary Fox. Dr. Fox is an assistant professor in the Department of Health Policy and Management at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. She teaches methods in quantitative risk assessment, featuring probabilistic exposure assessment methods as part of the Johns Hopkins Risk Sciences and Public Policy Institute certificate program. Dr. Fox's research is focused on quantitative human health risk assessment as part of environmental policy making, particularly approaches to cumulative and chemical mixtures risk assessment. So, without further ado, Dr. Mary Fox.
Thank you so much. Good morning, everybody. We were just talking about how my talk is really off topic for the session overall. So I appreciate your indulgence this morning. Variety is the spice of life. So and APHA is great in terms of the vast variety of topics that we can think about. So let me talk a little bit about chemical and drug evaluation frameworks with an emphasis on improving strength and transparency. And I'm representing our team this morning. And I have no commercial relationships to disclose relevant to this talk. So we came to this topic, and we're comparing different programs, and I'll lay those out in a minute, really from kind of our own personal interests. So I'm in the Risk Sciences and Public Policy Institute. I teach chemical risk assessment, so my area is, you know, industrial chemicals, pollution, you know, and mainly I work with EPA in terms of the agency agency work that I do. My colleagues are in our Center for a Livable Future, which looks at agricultural systems and food production. And so they're more interested in, well, in chemicals, but also in, like, animal drugs, for example. And one of our, one of the authors is actually a lawyer who used to work at FDA, and so he was interested in the drug piece, and that's his doctoral research. So we kind of, launched this project basically with, you know, our academic interests in sort of specific programs. We found that there was no comprehensive review of these programs, so we thought, okay, well, you know, this is a useful exercise. And so, you know, the basic question is, how do the policies that these agencies use in their drug or chemical evaluations affect both public participation and transparency, and sort of that's a little bit of an advocacy piece to this work, and then public health protection kind of as the bottom line. But there's also, you know, in addition to our academic interests, there is a political context here. Many, as you may know, many of the public health agencies at the government level are coming under fire. There's an anti-regulatory climate. There are stakeholders casting doubt on agency science. Of course, we're coming at this kind of from the other side. We feel that these are critical programs that should be strengthened. So we got two. There's the broader political context. There's our kind of academic interests. Okay, how do these programs really work? But then our subtext is that, you know, we want to get this information out because we, you know, these programs are really important, and, you know, we want them to be doing their best. So I'm going to show you some of the descriptive information we've gathered to compare programs in these three general domains. So kind of data gathering, analysis, data management. Also sort of presentation, public participation, and transparency. So how much of the work that the agencies do is sort of open and visible. And then our next steps, actually, will be looking in more detail kind of at the science and technical piece of the risk assessment methodology. So today I'm focusing just on these first two domains, kind of the data piece and the participation and transparency. And, you know, we, as you'll see, there are some differences across these programs, which we think are opportunities to improve. And ultimately, looking at this piece of the public participation and then at the risk methodologies, we're hoping that we can ultimately kind of optimize public health protection. Now, these are the five programs that we looked at across three agencies, two within EPA, the Integrated Risk Information System. You'll see me use the acronym IRIS, the Office of Pesticide Programs, OPP. At FDA, we looked at the Center for Drug Evaluation and Research, CDER, Center for Veterinary Medicine, CVM, and also within CDC, the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry. You'll see there is a program missing, and that's also one of our next steps to fill in, and I'll get there. So here was our basic approach. We have seven steps. I'll try to condense this down a little bit. So we laid out a framework, sort of a survey, you know, covering those three main domains that I presented earlier. And then we looked at what was available in the public record to sort of answer those questions. Then we went to the agencies and sought out partners, basically, to review what we had found and set us straight if we didn't have the right answer or to find the gaps, to fill the gaps that we had not been able to collect from the public record. We then revised that framework to make our comparisons and writing up the story, you know, based on the feedback that we got from the agencies. And we will share again with our contacts. And these are the kind of the seven pieces that we included in our framework. So data sufficiency, the methods piece, treatment of confidential business information, the peer review and public comment process, updating of the assessment, how chemicals are selected and sort of how the program is doing in terms of sort of its universe, and also accessibility and ease of sort of use and ease of, well, location we have here. It's not exactly location, but where do you find the products? Can you find the products of these programs and look at the toxicity information yourself? The various mandates underlying the programs that we looked at, the four of them have statutory basis. The IRIS program does not have a statutory mandate, but basically an agency mandate. I won't go into detail here, but so basically we're looking at industrial chemicals, chemical pollutants, human and animal drugs, and pollutants at Superfund sites. So those are the basic categories that we're looking at. And I include this slide in even more of an alphabet soup, and I apologize for that, but really the underlying reason for this is to hammer home the point of the importance of these programs. So for the chemicals in their universe, they are looking at a broad range of toxicity and developing metrics that are used then in risk assessment and decision-making in a wide variety of contexts. And that's really what I want to get across here, that, you know, again, the underlying importance and the critical nature of these programs to protect the public from toxic chemicals. And just kind of a highlight on some of the things that we found. First, the discretion versus specificity, or another way to say that is kind of flexibility versus structure in the way these programs both are set up and the way they implement their toxicity evaluations. There are quite dramatic variations in transparency and public participation, both in terms of how much of the process is sort of visible to the public, and how much of the information is easily accessed sort of after the evaluation is done. And also variation in terms of the rigor and timeliness of how the evaluation procedures play out. And particularly for today, the issue of updating comes out as an important one. Here's a little bit more detail, a little more fine-grained on the program comparisons. Just to hit on a couple of these things, so if we look at, so the first column is our program. The second column is the use of confidential business information. So just to look at that piece for a moment. So in the IRIS program, which looks at industrial chemicals basically for EPA, and in the case of the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, which is looking at chemicals at hazardous waste sites, they very rarely use confidential business information. They are gathering their information from the peer-reviewed literature, for the most part. In contrast, the programs that have that are approval-based, so basically an industry comes to the Office of Pesticide Programs or the Center for Drug Evaluation and Research and says, okay, we have a pesticide, we have a drug, we want you to approve it so we can market it and use it. more use of the confidential business information for those approval-based programs, the drug and pesticide programs, but only sometimes in the case of pesticides and very much so in terms of both human and animal drugs. So quite a variety in terms of confidential business information. And, you know, there's another level to go to here in terms of how they define confidential business information and sort of the controls that they have for it. But just sort of for our purposes today, just to know that there is quite a variation in terms of the use of this information. And one thing to know about confidential business information, even if the program has used it, they will make some kind of summary available. So you won't be able to see the raw data, but they'll make a summary available as part of the documentation of the review. Peer review is another interesting one. The IRIS program at EPA has a very extensive peer review process. Multiple stages of review with different stakeholders, internally and then externally, within sister agencies and external experts. And one of the reasons that the IRIS program has come under fire is because their process takes too long. And basically, one of the reasons is the multiple levels of sort of repeated review, and there's two stages of intergovernment review. So it's a really complicated and drawn out process. In contrast, some of the other ones are much more streamlined, but also much more, or rather, much less transparent. Another variation that we found disturbing, really, is that IRIS does not have a mandate for updating their assessments, and that's a real problem for them. There are processes for updating in the other programs, and that's one of our main points that we hope to change, really, with our work, is that we hope we can encourage the IRIS program to set up some kind of reasonable system of updating. Just the last one here on access to the program products. Some of it is very readily available, and that particularly for the IRIS program and the ATSDR program, they have websites that you get the documents. They'll even send you a CD. You can download the IRIS database to your own computer if you'd like. In contrast, again, so these approval-based programs have somewhat more difficult hurdles to go through if you want to get the information. There are searches, so they have search engines and databases, but you really have to know how to use them, and you have to have, docket numbers and chemical names, drug names, things like that to kind of get into it. So the searches can be challenging. The searches can also have huge yields. So I know the pesticide program best, so I'll just give you an example from there. So if you search on atrazine, obviously that's it's a common pesticide. We've studied a lot. If you search regulation.gov for atrazine, you get over 5,000 documents. And then you have to figure out, okay, what do I really need to look at? How do I sort through that? Even if you search the Office of Pesticide Program database for atrazine, you get over 300 documents, and you still have to kind of figure, okay, where do I go to find the information that I'm looking for? So access is another area where we hope we may be able to move some change. So obviously there's some challenges in this comparison that we're doing, quite disparate programs. They're looking at different types of chemicals. But I think there are some overarching issues that can be improved across, although there may not be a one-size-fits-all, obviously. And as we see, as we go on to the next stage, when we're looking at the risk assessment methodologies, the more technical piece, we're going to run into the issue that really they're different applications. The programs are specialized for a reason, and so we're going to have to sort of negotiate that as we look at the technical parts. And so in terms of next steps, the one agency that we have neglected so far, and we will address in our immediate next steps, is to include the Center for Food Safety and Nutrition, which is another FDA agency. And as I've already said, we will be looking at the technical piece in terms of our comparisons. But then just sort of thinking longer term in future directions, I think it would be interesting for us to do some international comparisons, maybe looking at the European Food Safety Agency, for example. We'd also like to do kind of policy versus practice. So now that we've captured the basic policies and the steps that they use in terms of their implementation, it'd be interesting to see, okay, so how do these actually work out with some specific, chemical-specific cases? And I think we started our work thinking, delusionally perhaps, we would come up with the answer. So there must be, an answer. There must be a way to kind of harmonize or unify the way these things are done. And really, as we've learned, as I've mentioned in terms of the challenges, it's a little bit of apples and oranges. And so there probably, there isn't going to be a one-size-fits-all, but there are some important areas like updating, which seems really obvious, where some improvements can be made. And learning from the different programs about, what's a reasonable way to update, without kind of breaking the bank or, sending, a lot of resources towards, updating when you also need to kind of keep going with the basic coverage of new chemicals. And I think that's it. Thank you. Should we have questions at the end?
I think we have time for one question.
Okay, anything?
Yeah.
Yes.
Depending on the published literature, which has a wide variety of
Well, and I had the good fortune to speak at the IRIS stakeholder meeting last fall, and presented pretty much what I presented this morning. And I mean, I think the way the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry does theirs makes a lot of sense, because they do have a mandate to review things every 3 years. But the way they've interpreted it is that they do an annual literature review. So they kind of check, like every year they try to check, okay, what's new for chemical X? But they don't necessarily have to go, you know, in the third year review, you know, they look at the, you know, literature updates. And if it doesn't indicate they should be changing anything, they don't change anything, you know. So that seems reasonable. I don't know how we can transfer, how do we transfer that to EPA? But I mean, that's something to think about. Great, thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Fox.